Last time we started in Yanei Pesach, we were focused on Isuri Chametz. We spoke about the Daraisas and the Drabanans, the Isurim Daraisa of Achila and of Baira by a Matzah of owning Chametz, the Mitzvah Daraisa to destroy the Chametz. Focus, we're Machmer. Whatever possible to specifically destroy the chametz, at least the final chametz, through incineration by burning it. And we spoke within that context about bittel, machlokas about bittel. Spoke about machlokas about bedika, and bedika led us up to the topic that we'll start with right now, which is mechiras chametz. We left off last time saying, well, Bedika may take a step back if you do a Mechiras Yud Gimel. So let's just back up and explain. Mechiras Chametz is very fascinating. Thank you very much. And I actually brought along, if you want to see what it looks like, just to explain the background of Mechiras Chametz. Like we were saying last time, we have an Yisur Daraisa against owning Chametz over the course of Pesach and a Mitzvah Daraisa to destroy Chametz in advance of Pesach and Erev, but we assume that means an Erev Pesach morning. Min HaTorah, all of the Erev Pesach morning. Midrabanan before, an hour before Chatzos, or before the last Sha'ah Zmanos. We divide the morning into six Sha'ah Zmanos, and Min HaTorah, one can eat and own Chametz up until Chatzos, up until the sixth hour. Midrabanan, you can't have Hana or ownership of the chametz during that last hour, and you're not supposed to eat the chametz during the last 2 hours. That's what you'll see, a sof zman achilas chametz, and then the sof zman biur. That's the last point at which you're allowed to own or have hana. So you want to do the biur either earlier or specifically during that fifth hour in between the sof zman achilas and sof zman biur. And let's explain why. So the traditionally, the way you got rid of chametz was you consumed it. You destroyed it. Either it got eaten up, or it got given away, or it got thrown to the winds, destroyed, flushed away. And ideally, as I said before, machlokas atanam, so the last kazayas should be destroyed at least, or whatever remains at the end should be, but at least the kazayas should be destroyed through beer. Minchas Chinuch has a discussion, is there a mitzvah? Is a dafka a requirement to do beer chametz? Let's say I don't own any chametz. We ate it all up. And you realize the morning of Erev Pesach, we talk of no chametz left. You're supposed to go out and get yourself chametz so that you can do a ma'isa beer chametz, or it's just if need be, that's how it goes. Usually, that's not an issue, even without people randomly dropping off Dunkin' Donuts at your front door. Usually, most people tend to have some chametz lying around Bein Kol V'Kol, so yam v'nichnas into the suffix of the Minchas Chinuch. But that's usually what Bir Chametz looks like. A couple of centuries ago, there was this idea that there could be another way of dealing with the Isser of Bali Ra Bali Matze. And that would be maybe we could sell the Chametz away to the guy. So what's the historical background? What's the halachic background? So the idea of selling something to a non-Jew in order to avoid negative halachic considerations, but that actually dates back much further. If a Jew owns kosher animals, you own kosher domesticated animals. If you have a Jewish farmer who owns cows or sheep or goats, so if I own a female cow, sheep or goat that's having a child for the first time, if that child is a viable male child, that calf or that ewe or lamb is now kadosh min haTorah. Kadosh b'kedushas kachim kalim, kadosh b'kedushas aguf. That animal just became a bechor. We had an introduction to kachim a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned every carbon has to begin with a kiddush peh. You have to designate it as being kadosh. So one of the only exceptions is bechor. Bechor becomes kadosh automatically. The Gemara talks about being kadosh meirechem. As soon as it's born, the fact of being born as a bechor makes it kadosh. So what are you going to do? You're a Jewish child. The days of Beis HaMikdash, Gevaldik. Gevaldik. It's an obligation and an opportunity. You're going to bring that animal. Next time you come to Beis HaMikdash, it'll be Ola Regel. Maybe you'll make a special trip. You'll bring that animal along, and you'll be makfir as a carbon. That's a beautiful mitzvah and a requirement. A mitzvah in both senses. L'achar korban habayis, there's no opportunity. There's no opportunity to actually make the mitzvah of hakravas b'chorban when you have beis hamikdash. What it is a walking liability. Because that animal is kadosh, and any hana you have from it is going to be me'ila. What are you going to do? It's a walking problem. Literally, a walking liability. It's ma'avish a constant opportunity for lav and daraisa on 4 feet. No good can come out of that. There's not a mikdash, you have to be careful about me'ila, but you have the opportunity, bring it as a carbon. But here, there's no out. There's no out, and then there's no positive endgame. Shiyavu HaMashiach, Mashiach comes before the animal passes away, you can bring it as a carbon. But if not, then not. So that's why for well over 1,000 years it's been practiced by Klal Yisrael to do a Bali Tosis talk about it, but this dates back, I believe, long before the Bali Tosis. The indications of Gemara about this, you sell part of the Behema Mivakeres to a Nachri in advance of its first birth. I own a goat. I own a herd of goats, and I know these three goats are having babies for the first time. It may be a male, maybe a female, but if it's a male, it's going to have Kedushas Bechar. So based on the first mission in Becharos and the first mission in the second parak of Becharos, you sell away a share in the mother to a non-Jew in advance of the birth. At the moment of the birth, when the Kedusha would be instilled, it's a Shutfus Yisrael V'Nachri, so such an animal does not create Kedushas Bechar. So that's a way to sidestep the Kedushas Bechar, which nowadays, Bizman HaMikdash, that would be inappropriate. Because Bizman HaMikdash is a harama, it's a legal fiction, it works, but obviously it's an end run around a mitzvah. It's an end run around a mitzvah, a harama to avoid a mitzvah say, that's inappropriate. But Bizman HaZeh, there is no opportunity for mitzvah say. All it is, it's a harama to avoid lavin. It's a harama to avoid averus. Lamasa, it's not going to be a Bechar. You're right, in the natural course of events, it would have become a Bechar. I stood in my head, I did something out of the ordinary to see to it, to rig the system so it wouldn't become a Bechar, but all I'm doing is avoiding Isurim. Lamaisa is not a Bechar, so there's no Aveira. If it's avoiding a mitzvah, that's wrong. It's avoiding Isurim. Rav Shechter points out in Mikveh Atzon, it's actually his type of a tzushtel. He says, this is similar to a Maharal about Avos Kodesh Matan Torah. He discussed this many weeks ago, during the weeks of Chumash Bereishis, that Ramban raises a question, which many others raise as well, certainly after him, how do you make sense of Avos Kodesh Matan Torah? On the one hand, the Gemara, Mesachas Yuma, and then Midrashim about Avraham Avinu keeping Kol Torah Kula, maybe Avos in general keeping Kol Torah Kula, and yet you look throughout Chumash Bereishis, Yaakov is married to two wives, they're bringing Karban HaMatzeva, so many indications that they were not keeping Kol Torah Kula. At the time we discussed different approaches. Ramban says maybe it's only Eretz Yisrael. Ramban says maybe it's only Avraham Avinu, like what you find as is indicated in Maseches Yuma. Nefesh HaChaim says it wasn't an obligation; it was something they were volunteering, so they were able to make because of the Kodesh Matan Torah. So they were able to make at times a specific call that right now would make more ruchnias sense to violate the din, which he, as he stresses, is not something that one can do l'achar matan Torah. L'achar matan Torah, I can't say it would be better for my ruchnias to say Kriya Shema after Zman, because now we're obligated, so it's not up to me. But Kodesh Matan Torah, that they were doing it because they saw it, they understood the value in it, but it wasn't obligatory, so that's why they're able to make those sorts of calls. Maharal says, it's in his parish on Rashi al Torah in Vayigash, in the Gur Aryeh, Maharal says it's a difference between mitzvah sase and mitzvah lo sase. Maharal says they were volunteering. Maharal says it's only meaningful to volunteer a mitzvah, not to volunteer a lot. To volunteer a mitzvah, I wasn't obligated to do it. Had I not done the mitzvah, there'd be nothing wrong if I'm not obligated. If a woman doesn't shake lulav, she hasn't done anything wrong. She's not obligated. But if she does shake lulav, then she had a kiyum hamitzvah. So she's not obligated, but if she volunteers, it's meaningful. Maharal writes, but how do you volunteer a lav? What does it mean to I'm going to volunteer to avoid that which for me is not usher anyhow. A non-Kohen is going to volunteer to not be Matam and Lameis. Not that he's going to become a Nazir. He's just going to decide he's not going to be Matam and Lameis. So there's no meaning in that, because had he been Matam and Lameis, nothing wrong. And what's he doing? He's passively not being Matam and Lameis. There's no kiyum in that. There's no substance to that. There's only meaningfulness to volunteer mitzvah say, not to volunteer mitzvah lo say. Yisrael and Kohen anyways may be different. Maybe Yisrael couldn't volunteer a mitzvah Kohen either, but the concept, you can't volunteer a lav, so the Maharal says, Kol Zman Torah wasn't obligatory, the others volunteered mitzvah say. But what does it mean, Maharal says, to volunteer mitzvah lo say? So Shefta points out, there seems to be similar logic here as well. To make an end run, a legal fiction, a harama, to avoid a mitzvah say, that's inappropriate. Sugis and Bechoros and elsewhere, that's inappropriate. You could be doing a mitzvah. So now, technically, not obligating the mitzvah because you rigged the system, but you avoided getting a kima mitzvah. So that's inappropriate. If I'm going to set up a system to avoid a lav, so I avoid a lav. Whether I avoid a lav by not doing the action that typically would have been a lav, or I rigged it so that that action is no longer aser. For instance, one of the most classic examples, I sold the behema mevakeres. I sold the mother about to have the mother animal about to have its first baby. I sold a share in that animal to an achri, and I tell him we'll probably renegotiate afterwards. I know, they buy it back at a profit, and it'll perhaps be more valuable at that point. Got to figure out. It's passed childbirth successfully. But you sell a share in the animal to the Nachri for the course of the birth, so we have successively avoided the Isser of Me'ilah on the baby. And there's no mitzvah that I'm missing out anyways, because Shloba Zman HaBayis is nothing I can do positively with the Bechar. So that's, there were those, Reish Lakish has a beautiful Arkham Bikvatzon about this, there were those who are concerned about a harama even to avoid a lav. He points out, Pasha says, a Rama to avoid lav should be okay, but a Rama to avoid a mitzvah say is inappropriate. So that's, with that idea of mechira by behemah v'keres was the model, centuries later, for the notion of mechiras chametz, which I believe historically developed as a result of the rise of Jews in the liquor industry, not as consumers, but as purveyors. And that was driven in part by the economic regime in Eastern Europe. I'm sure you've studied in Jewish history that for many, many centuries, Jews were being pushed, particularly in Eastern Europe, were being pushed out of all sorts of professions, including farming, and were squeezed into increasingly narrow career options. That's why, over the course of the Middle Ages, many Jews ended up in moneylending. That was one of the few, in certain parts of Christian Europe, in the Middle Ages, that was one of the few jobs that Jews were allowed to have, which had all sorts of negative repercussions. And in Eastern Europe, over the last number of centuries, those similar type of pressures pushed many Jews into running kretschmers, to running inns, where often the prime attractor feature was not so much that you could take a bed for the night, but that you could come and drink. And the Jews were not necessarily known for being big consumers of liquor, but in many years in Eastern Europe, they became the primary sellers of whiskey. Now, their problem is that if you own chametz, especially before modern refrigeration, so chametz, how much chametz you're going to own anyways, how much chametz is going to last? Once the chametz, it's not a raw grain, it's been baked into bread, into cookies, into cake, whatever it is, but it has a certain shelf life. So you're not going to have that much, especially you don't have refrigeration, you don't have modern preservatives, you don't have modern packaging. So you have some chametz around the house. Okay, you have some chametz around the house. You eat it, get rid of it, you burn it, chine. The liquor is a way of preserving, can't say the nutrition of grain, but what some people see as the value of grain, and obviously a much more durable way. And whiskey is not going to go bad after a week or two or three. It's not going to go stale in months. And you think about the amount of grain that it takes to make a bottle of whiskey. It's a lot of grain value in a relative, pretty dense economically, and it lasts. So all of a sudden you have Jews who own the equivalent of thousands, maybe tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars in stock, of actual merchandise stock of chametz, and a chametz that's durable. And so what's the approach? So what are we going to do? So you could either get rid of it, you could try strategically buy and sell so that as Pesach draws closer, your stores of whiskey deplete. Or you could use the concept of mechira that originally came from Behemah Mevakeres, use it for chametz as well. I believe historically, mechiras chametz began with those Jews who were in the whiskey business, who had large stores of chametz value and durable chametz value. And then over time, it became more popular. I'm not sure if this is the case historically, but it could be it became more popular, particularly as with the advent of modern food technology, and with the advent of durable, you could buy a box of Cheerios. If you keep it sealed, it could last well on your shelf for months and months and months, which didn't used to be the case. Before that, plastic bags, everything was a little different. So lamasa, so that's become increasingly common. There is this sort of misconception people sometimes have. There's like a mitzvah of mechiras chametz. Like that's one of the things you're supposed to do beer and bedika and bitzel and mechiras. So that is not the case. There's no chiyuv to sell your chametz. It's not a chumrah, but it's an opportunity. If you want to not be mevayer all of your chametz, you have the option to sell some of it to an achrim, and then it's out of your hands. Many poskim suggest it would be ideal if you did beer after mechira, if that's a possibility. And so that way the last chametz leaves your possession through sreifa. It's not always, I forget scheduling-wise, that's an option. But there are poskim would suggest, wouldn't it be better, you sold the chametz away, that's not beer chametz, likely. That's a way to avoid, it's a way to avoid the lav of by Rabbi Matzah, a haram on a lav. The last chametz should leave your possession through sreifa or through some other type of destruction. There you chaper in the mitzvah of tashbisu. A question? Then let's talk about the details. Yeah.
How does this compare in terms of how preferable it is, how much it works to selling the land by shmita?
Oh, yeah. That's another example of mechira ta'anachri as legal fiction is. Heter Mechira. Heter Mechira has a long lineage. There's a Machlokas Gedolei Olam that goes back to the late 1800s, I believe. And the Tziv and others were involved in that Machlokas. Theirs is more complexity. To make a major Tshuvas are written on both directions. There's sometimes a misconception that no serious post can support the Heter Mechira. But that's not the case. But it is a complicated. It's far more complicated than mechiras chametz or mechiras be'em vekeres. In part because there is an iser against lo sechanim against selling eretz yisrael to nachrim, and in part because it's not clear that's effective. In other words, it's clear that if your chametz belongs to nachri, if chametz belongs to nachri, then not by Rabbi Matzah. Assuming I have no liability, and you have to work through the sugyas and tzachim. And it's clear that the Mishnayis, if the Shutfas Yisrael V'Nachri and Be'im V'Keres, so then there's no issue of Kedushas Bechar. But it's not 100% clear that, it's far from clear, that if Eretz Yisrael belongs to a Nachri, the Mitzvahs, Atulis Be'ars, don't apply. That's actually, the Gemara debates that. If you have, does it depend on ownership, or Karka of Eretz Yisrael B'Yad Nachri may still be Chayv, Yesh Kinyil Nachri L'Hafkiyam Edei Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, not, so that's a big debate. That's much more complicated. Plus, there may also be mitzvah aseh that you're missing out on through that mechira. But let's come back here. Now, there is complexity in mechira's chametz also, and I'll take more questions. There is complexity in mechira's chametz also, and I'll actually invite you, if you're interested, to come with me and see. Mechira's chametz is very fascinating, in part for the following reason. It sounds very simple. We'll sell the chametz to the nachri. He owns it. And then we'll renegotiate with him after Pesach. Hopefully he'll be open to buying to selling it back, perhaps at some degree of profit. It's great. So if you own a kretschmer somewhere outside of Minsk in Poland, and you have 24 barrels of whiskey, which is again it's worth a lot of money, you could load those 24 barrels of whiskey onto the back of your wagon, drive it over to the home of a local nachri who's willing to buy from you over the course of Pesach, drop it off, he pays the purchase price, and then we'll come back in a week and renegotiate. That's simple, that's clearly effective. Clearly effective because the Gemara Brachoros has a machlokes, which kinyan is effective to convey metaltalim between a Jew and a non-Jew. Gemara's a machlokes, whether we know that Meshicha handing something over is the classic kinyan. The Mishnah tells us in Kiddushin that's the classic kinyan to convey ownership of metalton. The Gemara says machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, whether that's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. Does that really work in the Torah, or is that only d'rabbanan? Maybe what really works in the Torah is paying for it, but because of a concern, if I pay for metalton but I don't take delivery yet. So the guy may say, tomorrow, oh yeah, I'm sorry, it burned down. Sorry. It was already yours. You paid me for it, it was already yours. It was your loss, I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. How am I going to prove otherwise? So because of dishonest people, the Gemara says, maybe Mashiach is only a kinyan drabbana. Maybe not Torah. Ma'os kanos, midrabbana, Mashiach is only midrabbana. We know that Mashiach works l'maisa. We're not sure whether Mashiach works in Torah, or really in Torah, Ma'os works, Mashiach is drabbana. The Gemara says, based on Psukim, whichever kinyan works between Jews, the other kinyan, the other of these two, works between a Jew and a non-Jew. Based on Psukim. So if you think that Mashiach works min HaTorah, between Jews, then you need Ma'os, you need money, to affect a sale between a Jew and a non-Jew. If you think that Ma'os works min HaTorah, Mashiach is on Jabanan, then Mashiach works min HaTorah, between a Jew and a non-Jew. So what emerges? A machlokas, a safek, which kinyan works, Ma'os or Mashiach, to effectively convey merchandise, metalklim, from a Jew to a non-Jew. So if you are the owner of that kretschmer outside of Minsk, no problem. You'll drive over the 24 barrels of whiskey, you'll drop it off in the Nachri's backyard, and he'll pay you for it. So you have them both, Ma'os and Mashiach. So the kinyan was that one or the other kinyan definitely worked. So that's great if, again, we're doing a very targeted, limited Mechiras Chametz. But right here, I have shtaris that represent, just what I brought along, are shtaris that represent over 100 Jews who are interested in selling their chametz to a non-Jew. The chametz is located in well over 100 locations. We're not going to physically deliver all of that chametz to Mr. Brown. So we need to find some way, so Mashiach is not an option. So if you think that Mo's Kono's great, he'll pay me for it. He'll pay me a pruta per purchaser. If I have a hundred sellers and a pruta is close to 2 cents, they'll give me $2 pruta per kinyan. Give all that. The problem is, what if Mo's doesn't work? Mashiach is not an option. So as a result of that, we do a total of 6 kinyanim. If you watch Mechiras Chametz, there are 6 different kinyanim going on, because each one has a shaila, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. We assume between all the 6 kinyanim, something is going to work. So we do Mos. Pay a pruta per kinyan. And we, one of the another kinyan mentioned in Shas, mentioned in Mishnayos, is mentioned in a Pasuk in Megillas Rus, Sudar. If you do a kinyan Sudar, you do a Chalipin, so that's a highly effective kinyan, specifically the Chalipin of Sudar, to give a handkerchief or some kli as a symbolic representation that I'm giving you this kli in return for which you're giving me whatever, karka, metalklim, rights over property. Sudar is a very versatile kinyan. Does it work between a Jew and non-Jew? That's a suffix. So we do a Sudar. So Mr. Brown comes with his pocket knife, and he hands me a pocket knife in symbolic representation of the fact that I'm conveying to him ownership of the karka. So far that's 2. Number 1, Mos. Number 2, Sudar. Number 3, the Gemara says that there's a kinyan. In addition to the list of kinyanim that Chazal have, anything which is prevalent in your industry is a valid kinyan. If you're on 47th Street in the Hamish Diamond District, so it's understood that once you shake hands, you say Mazel Bracha, the deal's done. That closes the deal, there's no backing out. That closes the kinyan. So that's what the Gemara calls Situmta. The Gemara says, whatever is minig ha-socher, whatever is commercial custom in your industry, that works. The Gemara says that there was a time when the way, in the wine industry, if you signed your name on the barrel of wine, that was the kinyan. That was indication, now the deal's closed. Okay, that's minig ha-socher, that works when you sign your name. It's not on the official list of kinyanim, it doesn't have to be. Minig ha-socher, Situmta, that works. The question is, once again, does that work between a Jew and a non-Jew al pidin or not? So that's kinyan number 3, shake hands. Kinyan number 4, we do a shtar. Shtar does assume not to work for metalim generally between Jews, but perhaps it works between a Jew and a non-Jew, so we have a shtar. And then 5 and 6 involve the karka. If you're present, if you ever come to we often say there's mechiras chametz hours in shul, but obviously no one's selling the rabbi is Jewish also. The rabbi is not interested in buying your chametz. So what's going on in shul is not mechiras chametz. Mechiras chametz goes on this Thursday afternoon and Friday morning, and we'll explain in a moment why there are two times. What's going on in shul is authorization for mechiras chametz. That's what the top of all these shtaris that each person fills out, it says power of attorney. I'm not buying your chametz, but you're authorizing me to sell your chametz, to be your agent, to sell your chametz on your behalf, to be a broker and an agent. So to be a broker, to be an agent to sell the chametz, and to lease the area where the chametz is located. Why are we leasing this area where the chametz is located? Number one, that way it won't even be Nachri's chametz in Jewish property. It'll be Nachri's chametz on non-Jewish property. So those particular closed cabinets, those particular closed shelves, what have you, are being leased to Mr. Brown or to whichever Nachri one is selling the chametz, leasing the spaces. But not only do you want to be non-Jewish owned chametz on non-Jewish property, but the conveyance of the karka also gives me an additional two kinyanim. Kinyanim 5 and 6 both have to do with the karka. Number 5 is by renting the karka, now we can have a kinyan chatzar. If a davar shel hefker is in my backyard, it becomes mine by virtue of being in my backyard. That's kinyan chatzar. So we're gonna by renting him the property, we'll have the kinyan chatzar. And by renting the property, there's something called agav. The Mishnah says that if you makna karka is so important, in makna karka, you can the metaltim can ride on the karka's coattails. So we do money, sudar, handshake, shtar for the chametz itself, and then we also do money, sudar, handshake, and shtar altogether for the renting the property, and that gives me another two kinyanim, chatzar and aga. The total of all six are going on. There are more details, but I think there's more than enough. There are more details in terms of liability and buyback and so on and so forth. Usually the way it's structured is that the down payment is given, as in many purchases. You have a down payment, b'shas ma'isa, of a pruta per seller. And then the balance is the balance of the purchase price is due in 10 days. So at the end of Pesach, so the Nachri owns the chametz of the course of Pesach. There are some communities where the Rav Dafka goes around with the Nachri Tumi sold the chametz. They make a random visit every year over the course of Chol Moed to someone's house, and the Nachri takes whatever chametz he wants to take. Yes, that serves to make it clear to people that this is a real mechira. At the end of Pesach, the Nachri has the option to either he owes the rest of the purchase price, he owes the rest of the market value of the chametz, which could be millions of dollars. So he has the right to pay that, or to sell back. So generally, the Nachri will take the option of selling back, although, it's particularly, if he went around during Pesach, so obviously whatever he took, he has to pay the balance of purchase price for. So those people will get either on the spot, or after Pesach, they'll get a check for the value of the bottle of whiskey that he took. He bought the whiskey, and he's paying for it. But he has the option, and depends on whatever he didn't take, to sell back, which is usually the option that he will take. Willig Shlita has worked for many years with a non-Jew by the name of Mr. John Brown, who professionally for decades was a real estate broker. So he understands legally and practically all about acquisitions. That's his professional expertise. So he understands exactly what he does. Full gemir das. All right, Will points it every year, of course, at kinyan agav, the notion that metaltlim are bottle to karka, so that's something very close to Mr. Brown's heart, because he's in real estate. So he values the halachic primacy of karka. And that is the way mechiras chametz works. So typically you do mechiras chametz the morning of the 14th. You could hold onto your chametz until then, and then around the time of the Yisra Achilles Chametz, you sell the Chametz, so that way it's out of your property, before it have your possession before the end of the fifth hour. If a Jew is going to be out of his house for all of Pesach, and is going to be ready to have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah Rabbanan of Bedikas Chametz in some other location, so if you rent out your entire house this before Shkia of the 14th, before Shkia of Bedikas Chametz, then there's no Chiyah of Bedikas Chametz whatsoever. That's a Gemara beginning of Maseches Pesachim, that whoever, when you have a landlord and tenant, you have to figure out did the lease already begin before the beginning of Leil Yudalit. If it did, so now it's the Socher's obligation. If the Socher is a Jew, Socher is a non-Jew, there's no Chiyah of Bedikas Chametz. That's why you do an early sale. If you can be away out of a house for all Pesach, you do an early sale. That means it's sold on Yud Gimel Nisan, save Yud Dal Nisan, sell the chametz and rent, more importantly, rent out the entire house in advance, then there's no chiyuv b'dikas chametz. Does that make sense to do? You're going to do b'dikas chametz somewhere else. Or you leave over one room, one of the rooms that has the chiyuv b'dikas chametz, you exclude that from the lease, do b'dikas chametz in that room, and the rest of the house is leased out in advance. So that's some of the background. If you're interested in coming with me to the Mechiras Yud Gimel this Thursday evening, many years guys have chosen to come, and it's fascinating to watch halacha in action, something you don't often get to see. So if you're interested, please, if you're interested and you're not going to be, if you will not be detracting from the staffing in your house by, if you're not needed for a pre-Pesach prep on Thursday afternoon, so if you're interested either in coming with me to Riverdale, please let me know. So that's Mechiras Chametz. That's Mechiras Chametz. But now let's open Haggadah. As promised, let's open Haggadah. The first question you should ask about the Haggadah, if we were being honest with ourselves, the first question, that this is very long. Very long. There's so much going on in Maggid. Then you might, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, practically speaking, everyone's hungry. It's been a long day, a long week, a long month. So let's eat. Let's eat. Let's talk afterwards. Isn't that the way you always run a program? If there's going to be food, ABCs are programmatics. Now, if you're running an event with a speech and a meal, so 9 times out of 10, the best way to organize things is to either have the talk over food or to have some food in advance and then a talk and then maybe a meal afterwards. But right, so karpas, if we eat many kazesim of karpas, then maybe that would help. Yeah, so the parsley doesn't really necessarily break your hunger. Even if you're from Elizabeth and the minig Elizabeth is to eat bananas, still not sure, unless you're going to eat. The minig Ashkenazim is to insist on eating less than a kazayis of karpas. The reason for that, Tosa says, is because of a suffix brachas. We're not sure if you should make a bar nefashis after karpas or not. So we say, better to eat less than a kazayis, because whenever you eat less than a kazayis, there is no chiyuv bracha achrona. The chiyuv bracha rishona, no matter how little you eat, bracha achrona only if you eat a kazayis. Why are we mesupik with that? Make a bar nefashis? Because Tosa says we're not sure whether the maror needs a bar pri adama also or not. Because eating the maror after hamotzi, but on the other hand, maror isn't really a very natural course in the meal. It's halachically appropriate course, leil haseder. So the question is, do you consider that to be a davar abba machmas asuda because it halachically fits in this meal? Or would you say, no, but from your natural culinary perspective, that's not a natural part of the meal. Now, it could be bizmanenu. We do often start the meal with a salad. So Tosa says, we're not sure whether you need a hadama on the maror. So to cover our bases, we'll just cover it. We'll have in mind, we make the hadama on karpas, that covers the maror too, in case it needs a bracha. But in order to do that, you can't make a bar nefashos in between. But here's the problem. If the hadama includes the maror too, so Yitaka should not make a bar nefashos, and it'll be covered by the benching. If the maror is not included in the hadama, if the maror does not need a hadama, then really you ought to make bar nefashos earlier after karpas. So that's why we're not sure whether you need to make a bar nefashos or not. The Bali Tosa say, well, the solution is eat less than a kazayis of karpas. And that way you for sure don't make a bar nefashos because you didn't have a kazayis. You'll have in mind that in case the maror needs a hadama, this is included. Shalom al Yisrael. But of course, the one now, the were we shown who Dafka assumed the opposite, I believe the Rambam, and some others say, Dafkas have to have an achilas karpas, but you should have a kazayis. But the Ashkenazi practice is Dafka to have less than a kazayis. So you have less than a kazayis, whether it's celery which is what the word karpas actually means, or it's any other, Shulchan Aruch says karpas or some other yerek, so whether it's celery or some other vegetable, supposedly Rabbi Teitz instituted in Elizabeth to dafka have bananas because he wanted to teach his Baal Batim that the bracha of bananas is hadama. Because many people would mistake it. Came to America, all of a sudden there's this new fruit they hadn't seen before, and many people apparently assume that you make a haetz on bananas. So in order to train people to understand that you make a hadama on bananas, he said, everyone choose banana for karpas. Everyone knows, karpas is hadama. So that taught this idea. That became, even though at this point, presumably everyone knows, by this point, the American community has come to understand that bananas are hadama, but that has remained, Baruch Hashem, as the minhag of Elizabeth. But even if you're eating bananas, you know, chatzi kazayis of banana is not really going to take the edge off of your hunger. So what's so, from a practical perspective, like honestly, why do we organize the maggid this way? Everyone knows the Yiddish jokes, right, about the two hobos who show up to the meal, and one doesn't know so much about the Seder. And then his fellow told him, his friend told him this could be a gavalik. No, the fellow told him, bad joke warning, just telling him in advance. And maybe there are people at your Seder who will appreciate bad jokes, so you can share with them. The two hobos show up, and one understands what a Seder is, and the other one does not. But he tells his friend, it's going to be the best food. The best food of the year, you got to come with it. He says, it'll take a little time, it'll take time to warm up, but you know, you'll see it's because that. So he shows up, they give him a glass of wine right away, okay, it's not bad, good start. And then they give him like a little bit of vegetables, like, well, okay, whatever. And then they start talking, and they take the bread, and they start talking and talking, talking endlessly, talking. They pour him a cup of wine right away. So he got excited. This is going in a good direction. And they're talking, no one's drinking, it's like, oh, well, he's about to drink, it's a little awkward. And then they're talking endlessly. The kids, the adults, go on and on and on. Every once in a while they tease him, they pick up the wine, they pick up the bread, they pick up the vegetables, but no one's eating anything. You can't understand it. And finally, hours later, I say, okay, now we're going to wash our hands, eat the bread. Great. Okay, so now my friend told me, okay, I guess he wasn't lying. We all wash our hands, and then they give him the horrific bread. It's crackers. And okay. He says, don't worry. Just hold on. And then, the good stuff is about to come. And then they give him the horseradish. And then he just says, forget about it. He's out the door. Right, you can imagine the scene. Now, there is a tifkai to that story. It's a mashal for how often are we that hobo. But mamish, the truth is, everything that Fred told was correct, and had he held on to the next step, then he would have enjoyed exactly what he had come to enjoy. He's so, so close. So, so close. Just when it seemed like he was farthest away from the end result he was looking for, he was actually super close. The Mara comes right before the Shulchan Aruch. So there's a lot of tikkun in that mashal, but it also highlights the fact that, like, why do we do this? And then you can even ask his L'shem Shamayim question. Not only am I hungry, A, why not eat sooner? B, haray, we mamash go out of our way, says the Rambam Shulchan Aruch, quote from the Gemara, that we go out of our way, Rabbi Kiva, to make sure that the kids are excited, and you give them candies, and you games, and this and that, to keep everyone excited. Why not just feed them? Unless he said, oh, we're not feeding them, so that way they'll stay up. Maybe. And then, thirdly, the most technical halachic question, the most technical way to phrase this question, is it should be usher to do this. You're not allowed to come home on a Friday night and make kiddush and then schmooze for an hour before washing. There's a din of kiddush malkum suda. There has to be a tziruf, location-wise, but also time-wise, between the kiddush. The kiddush has to be connected to the meal. Whether it's that the meal enhances the kiddush or that the kiddush designates the meal as a suda Shabbos, suda Yom Tov, you got to have a tziruf between the kiddush and the washing. So much so, how many yekkas in the room? Raise your hand. So what do you do differently at the beginning of every Shabbos meal? You wash and then you make kiddush, right? So us non-yekkas, when we come to your meal, invariably we always mess up, right? If you have non-yekkas in your house, everyone washes, then you sit down to kiddush, or stand, whatever, however you're sitting, standing for kiddush, right, of course. And then, invariably, non-yekkas will drink and then start talking. Like, no, right, because we non-yekkas are not used to, you already washed before you even made kiddush. But why talk, what's the issue? So the issue is exactly this. The question is, which hefsek do you want to minimize? So the non-Yekish approach assumes we want to minimize, we're going to wash after Kiddush so that we minimize the downtime between washing and the Hamotzi. The Yekish approach is, even more important than that, is to minimize the hefsek between Kiddush and Hamotzi. We want to have Kiddush Makom Masuda as much tziruf as possible in Kiddush and Masuda to say, let's even get the washing out of the way in advance. And the Kiddush is a tzorach Hasuda, so that's not a hefsek. So this way we'll wash in advance, that we go straight from Kiddush to Hamotzi with no up and down. Leila Seder, hours. How is that mutter? What happened to Kiddush Makom Masuda? What happened to Kiddush Makom Masuda? Why is the Seder so long? And why do we wait so long to eat? But to understand that, the answer has to do with two words in Chumash. Four words in Chumash. Four words in Chumash. The first word you got to know about, we spoke about this a little bit, the Masech is described in Chumash as Lechem Oni. What does that mean? Mysterious, beautiful phrase, very mysterious. Chazal have in the Bavli and elsewhere several different interpretations, but they wrap around two ways to translate the word Oni. Okay. Oni means what? So usually we translate lechem oni as poor man's bread. We wash an oni. And the Gemara says there are a number of dinim of what's kosher matzah, kosher for, not kosher la Pesach, non-chametz, but kosher for the mitzvah, the Erev Tochel Matzahs. It needs to be lechem oni. It has to be poor man's bread. That it's not matzah shir, it's not enriched, doesn't have other flavorings added. Even if you could make that in a way that wouldn't be chametz dip, which is complicated, but it definitely would not be kosher for the mitzvah leil haseder. Even if you belong to a community which would eat ed matzah over the course of Pesach, that's a big machlokas Ashkenazim and Sfaradim and even beyond. But everyone agrees you cannot have ed matzah for the mitzvah of achilas matzah leil haseder. It has to be, even if it's not chametz dip, it's definitely not lechem oni. It's matzah, we call it matzah shir. It's enriched bread, and it has to be. Lechem oni also means it cannot be too large. Usually does not a problem. And lechem oni is not only in terms of how the matzah is made, but you prep it by, it has to be broken. The Gemara says, ma darpu shal oni beprusa. The way a poor man eats bread, he says, you have to ration. If you have limited resources, you don't just eat everything now. You put aside for later, you eat some now. So the matzah, in order to be kosher for not all Pesach long, Leil HaSeder, you have to eat unenriched, rationed bread. That's lechem oni in the sense of ani. But then the Gemara says lechem oni also means the other sense of ayin, the shorish, is meloshen aniya, to speak. Right. It has to be lechem, adin daraisa, lechem sha'onim olav dvar maharbe. Bread that you say many words over. What are these many words you're saying over the bread? Rashi says, Haggadah, Halal. So, the matzah is only kosher for the mitzvah of achilas matzah once you've, it has to have absorbed your conversation. Like we were talking about yesterday, so the Rambam says it's not enough to say the words of Sipur Tzias Mitzrayim, you have to act them out. You eat your words. That's sometimes an expression, a negative expression in English, I'll make you eat your words. But here it's a positive expression in halacha. You say the words of Sipur Tzias Mitzrayim, and then we see the matzah is like absorbing, the matzah absorbs the words that are said over it, and you eat those words. It has to be, it's only kosher for the mitzvah, once it's lechem sha'onim olav dvar maharbe. That's why the matzah, says in Haggadah, they keep the matzah uncovered throughout Magad, except when we pick up the coast for halal. But other than that, halal including vihishamda, but generally the coast is down and the matzah is uncovered. Sure.
I'm sure
he
was trying to finish stuff up,
but
we have to solve it quick.
So matzah, as we were just saying a couple moments ago, so matzah needs to be, in order to, again, not just to be kosher lepesach not chametz, but to be ro'i for the mitzvah, the chiyuv of achilas matzah leil haseder, not just to be mutter of the course of Pesach, but is to fulfill your obligation of achilas matzah leil haseder, be'erev toch lematzahs, it needs to be lechem oni, both that it's impoverished, that it's not matzah ashira, and that it's already beprusa, but also it has to be lechem sha'onim of dvarim harbe. that it's bread that has absorbed the words of Haggadah and that little bit of challah that come before Achilas Matzah. So the matzah needs the Maggid. You can't really have the mitzvah of matzah without having already done Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the reverse is true as well. We say, over the course of Maggid, after we get rolling with Manishtana and the first answer to that question of Avodah Hayinu, we then, before the second answer, which was Mitchilo of Zohar HaYavaseinu, we spend time going through the instructions. It's ironic, sometimes people get so involved spending time in the instructions, you don't actually get, by the time you actually get through the real Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is Sei Lomader Ami Ovidavi, Vayareu Osanu, and so on and so forth, everyone is sort of like, oh, now we have to rush. That's actually telling the story. So it is good to spend time in the instructions too, and we will together soon on both. But in the instructions, we say the last instruction, or one of the last instructions, is when. We talk about who says it and how you say it and for how long you say it and to whom you say it and how do you structure it and when do you say it. Yachamei Rosh Chodesh, we call from the Midrash Halacha. I might have thought that the entire Nisan's Chodesh HaGeula, you could be Mekayim CPT in Shrine any time this month, which is a fascinating Havmina. So ultimately, the Midrash says you can only be Leila Seder. Why? B'shav, Sheish Matzah Umar Munachim Fanacha. You're only Mekayim the Mitzvah CPT in Shrine when you have the Matzah Umar on the table. And that's not just a question of timing, because Rabbi Gamliel tells us that one of the aspects of presumably, certainly the way we saw in the Rambam yesterday, one of the aspects of how you're Mekayim Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is specifically with audiovisual aids. You can't just talk about the story in abstract. You have to relate the story to Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. That's an aspect of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. So in order to be Mekayim Maggid, you need the Matzah there. In order to Mekayim Matzah, you need to have a ready fulfilled Maggid. So the two mitzvahs Baraisa Leila Seder, we only have two. We don't have it. We have not had a Karm Pesach in some time. Without a Karm Pesach, Gemara says, Maror is only Drabanan. Maror only exists in the Torah in conjunction with Karm Pesach. Gemara actually even had an opinion, which we don't accept. The same is true for Matzah. Remarkable Shita. But we assume no. Matzah, we understand, is also an adjunct to Karm Pesach. With that, we don't have that aspect. But we hold as an independent mitzvah Daraisa of the Erev Tohu Matzahs. So we have two mitzvahs, and therefore we have mitzvah Daraisa. Ooh, wow. Cool. How are you?
Great.
Can I catch you after this? So we assume that we pass and we have two mitzvahs Daraisa Leila Seder, Matzah and Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they are not independent. They are interdependent. You need the Maggid first in order to make the matzah lechem oni, and you need the matzah present in order to mekayim Maggid, Rabbi Gamliel. So what emerges is the order is very specific. That's why Maggid comes before matzah. We couldn't go from Kiddush straight to matzah, and not just because Kiddush Yishol HaTinokos, which is true, we bedafka do make it seem at the beginning as though we skip the meal. We have Kiddush, and then we wash, but then all of a sudden we just have a little vegetables, and we break the matzah, and then next thing you know, we're clearing the table. And back in the old days, they would actually take the tables away. Tosa says, well, we have big dining room tables, so we don't take the tables away, but we clear the table. We take off the matzah, we take off the ta'ara, and we pour a second kos, it's already at the bench. That definitely, if kids have not already been prepped on what's supposed to happen to the Seder, if kids would come to the Seder naturally, they would wonder what on earth is going on. Right? But that's also why we do it. But the primary reason why we organize things this way, because Maggid has to come before Matzah. We're not ready to eat Matzah yet. It's not yet Lechem Oni. It was baked properly. We have Yachatz. We break the Matzahs now. It's Dar Pshalim B'Prusa. Now there's one more thing that needs to do to Machshir the Matzah for the Mitzvah, and that is to say Maggid. And then the Maggid, and we'll have the matzah in order to have the Maggid. Why is Maggid so long? Why is Maggid so long? Okay, so 1, 2, 3. So why are we spending so much time? The answer is everything matters. Everything matters. The Tuchayim and the stencils, they ask, as we work our way through the Haggadah, maybe we'll see when we get to it. We'll see as a Gevaldik Kasha and points out
the unique definition of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim actually requires every single piece of Haggadah. It's all there. All those pieces are necessary. And as we'll see soon, everything falls into place. Let's take some questions, and then let's take a little breather, and then we'll come back and open Haggadah. Now that we understand what it is we're looking at, we're going to come back and actually do it. Yeah.
If it's true that the matzah needs both maggid and challah, according to the rush that you're fulfilling your matzah at motzi, you're fulfilling your mitzvah at motzi matzah, then you finish challah.
Correct. You have not, according to everyone, you don't finish challah until after.
If the mitzvah is at motzi matzah,
right? Whether it's motzi matzah or afikoman, right? As you're asking, how come we don't say all of challah over the matzah? That's a good question. We do say some of the challah over the matzah. Machlok is Beshan Beshil, whether you say one paragraph or two, we say two paragraphs of halal over the matzah. And that paragraph is sufficient to be Lechem Sha'onim Olav Duvarim Harbe. There is a notion of saying halal on a full stomach that you see in Maseches Tanis, and they Yarduk Shamim, and they're fasting for rain. So when it starts to rain, the Tanam tell us, you go home, you break your fast, you eat, and then you come back to give Hodah to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now there's a notion of the original model is likely Birkas HaMazon. Right? Birkas HaMazon Daraisa is Dafka after you eat. So I believe is part of why we save the bulk of challah for later. After we've eaten Karm Pesach, and certainly after we've eaten the rest of the meal. But we do have an element of challah in advance for two reasons. Number one, Lechem Sha'on Olav Dvarim Harbe. The way Rashi says that it has to be challah, also not just Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Ran develops the idea in the end of Pesachim that as part of a larger approach that Brisker Rav puts the pieces together, that there are two types of halal. There's halal of Yom Tov, but then there's halal of a reaction to a nes. So while the halal of the mornings of the morning of Pesach is what is Brisker Rav points out, the language of the Ran is halal shel kriya, a recitation, an expression of Simchas Yom Tov, but Halal Leil HaSeder is like Halal of Chanukah, which is Halal Chanukah is Halal Zeichel Neis, Halal Leil HaSeder is Halal B'Shas HaNeis. Chayvan Liris HaZatzmo, Lefikach, if we actually feel ourselves going through, then this is Mamash like the original Az Yashir. This is Halal response to Neis, and so that's why it's without a bracha, that's why it has like a spontaneous flavor to it. Halavai, we should feel spontaneous about it, but at least we structure it with a spontaneous flavor. It's just a couple of prakim, dafka just a couple of prakim, and dafka no bracha beforehand. It's meant to be a halal shel shira. And then the rest of the halal, the formal halal, as we grab a chunk right away, and then eat, and then afterwards we say the balance of halal. Yeah, question.
I have the same question.
Same question, great. Wow. Chavrusas are, chavrusa telepathy, that's amazing, yeah.
So if the magid does go for 1 hour, how is it
have a kish makam suda. The answer is very good. The answer is this is all letzara chasuda. Now it's all letzara chasuda if you understand why what all these pieces are doing here. But we'll see soon. We'll take a break and we'll take a 5-10 minute break. I think you need a little breather. Stretch your arms and then let's come back to open the Haggadahs and we'll start working our way through, and over the course of going through Magid, we'll come across Reb Chaim's idea, and that will point out how the entire Magid is actually legally required. All the pieces that you need in order to do what you need to do.